For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Good morning. Welcome, everyone. So for some of us, this is the fifth day of Rohatsu Sesshin, a retreat honoring the enlightenment of our historical Buddha, Shakyamuni Buddha, 2,500 years ago, more or less. Yesterday is the day that we this formally observed, but of course, we don't. It was a different kind of calendar. We don't really know. As is true of almost everything. We've been focusing on a particular story, a particular koan case from the Book of Serenity, which I've been talking from periodically. This is case 12. And the main characters are Dizong and Shushan. And Dizong was a teacher who... Dizong was the name of his temple, but that's also the Chinese for the Japanese word Jizo, the great bodhisattva, earth womb or earth matrix bodhisattva who takes care of farmers and children and mothers and people in liminal spaces, marginal people. Anyway, so this teacher is sort of named after that bodhisattva. So Dizong asks Shushan, "Where do you come from?" Shushan said, "From the south." Dizong said, "How is the Buddha Dharma in the south these days?" Shushan said, "There's extensive deliberation." Dizong said, "How can that compare to me here planting the fields and eating rice?" Shushan said, "What can you do about the world?" Dizong said, "What do you call the world?" So that's the story. And there are these two important questions here. What can you do about the world? And then Dizong saying, "What is it that you're calling the world?" So the backstory to this is that there were four monks traveling around. Shushan was one of them. They included Fayan, Wudong, and Jinshan. Fayan later became the founder of one of the five houses of Chan, five branches of Chinese Zen. And they were traveling around and at some point were blocked by rain and snow and swollen valley streams. So they stopped at this Dizong temple. And they sat around the fire and they kind of ignored the teacher there, Dizong. Dizong wanted to check them out, so he came by the fire and said, "Oh, there's something I'd like to ask about. Is it okay?" Shushan said, "Oh, if there's some question you have, go ahead." And Dizong said, "Are the mountains, rivers, and earth identical or separate from you elders?" Shushan said, "Separate." Dizong held up two fingers. Shushan hurriedly said, "Identical, identical." Dizong again held up two fingers and then left. Fayan asked what the meaning of those two fingers were. Shushan said, "Oh, he did that arbitrarily." Fayan said, "Oh, maybe there's..." He said, "Don't cruelly insult him. Maybe there's something here." And so Fayan stayed. The others left. Eventually they came back. And there are other stories later about Fayan and Dizong, which we got into, but I want to focus on this main issue? What can we do about the world? And what is it we're calling the world? In Hongzhe, who picked the cases and wrote the verses, part of his verse says, source and explanation or expression variously are all made up. He's saying even the source is made up. Passing to ear from mouth, it comes apart. Babble, 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 babble. Does it get to your ear? Planting fields, making rice, ordinary household matters. Only those who have investigated to the full would know. Having investigated to the full, you clearly know there's nothing to seek. And then Wansung, the commentator, says, communion with the source is one's own practice. Communion by speech or expression is showing it to those who are not yet awakened. And then he quotes the Lankavatara Sutra, where it says there are two kinds of communion. Communion with the source means by way of the character of transcending progress, one attains to utterly detach from false conceptions, from speech and symbols, and go to the realm of non-indulgence. By this process of self-awakening, light shines forth. This is called the quality of communion with the source. So this is an important aspect of our practice and in any given period of Zazen, but in a sesshin, in an intensive retreat like this, all day or day after day, particularly, we have this opportunity, communion with the source, communion with the ultimate, to settle calmly, deeply into awareness of universal, ultimate reality. It's not something we necessarily realize or have an awareness of, but going down deep into this ground and doing this practice regularly, you know, every day or several days a week, stopping to just be present, and whatever happens is okay, and to pay attention to thoughts and feelings and sensations and whatever's going on your seat, to face the wall, to face ourselves, to face all beings. This communion with the source is very deep and it's very important. The other side, to call it that, for now, the quality of communion by speech means teaching the various teachings of the nine branches of self-awakening, avoiding signs of difference or non-difference, existence or non-existence, and the like, using skillful means to express the truth as it's needed. This is the quality of communion by speech. There's a way in which this story leans over to the side of communion with the source, but both are essential to our practice. So maybe that's enough for now. So this basic issue, what can you do about the world? What do you call the world? So this was back in the early 900s. De Zong passed away in 928. But the second half of the 800s and the first half of the 900s in China was a time of great turmoil, civil war, many, many dead. The kingdom dividing. New Southern, the Southern Song dynasty appeared. You know, these wars between the North and the South happened from time to time. What can you do about the world was a real question then. And, you know, the point of studying these stories is not to some historical artifact, and it's not about trying to solve some puzzle or... But these are teaching stories that have continued because they have something to do with our lives. What can you do about the world? So many of us here in the Sangha are concerned about this. What can we do? Well, there are many problems in the world. And the world is not just, you know, the world out there. What about the world on your seat? What about, you know, the people you interact with during the week, family, friends, coworkers? What can you do about the world? Well, so many problems, so much sadness. The first noble truth is loss and sadness and dissatisfaction. But it's a noble truth because we can actually face it. We can sit upright or walk upright or stand upright, try to speak uprightly, kindly, and not run away from this reality, these problems. So what can you do about the world? And in our world now, of course, there's horrendous climate breakdown, floods in the southeast, fires out west where a couple of you live, and droughts and the Arctic melting, and it's happening very fast, and the UN panel just said that we have 12 years to do something about it, and somebody else, another scientist said, really, we only have 2 years. That and mass extinction, I've read that since 1970, 60% of the species on the planet have gone extinct. So that's so we're all suffering from climate trauma, a phrase of an eco-psychologist I know. We're all numb. We feel hopeless. Of course, there's plenty we can do. The effects of all this are going to be serious and cause lots of devastation and death, at least. But how bad it will be is still up to us now. So there are things we can do. So here's my, you know, rap about what we can do about the world. Call your senators or congresspeople or local legislators every day. Call one of them a day. Make one call a day. And say, please act on this. Or call your local newspaper or television station and ask them to please start using the word climate damage or climate breakdown instead of just extreme weather, as if it's a, you know, just happenstance. Or, you know, call institutions to ask them to divest from fossil fuel companies. Anyway, there are things we can do. Many other things we can do. And, you know, will that solve the problem? Of course not. But we don't know the effects of our positive actions. And also what we can do includes just recognizing and being aware and not turning away from or be distracted from the reality of our world and expressing kindness and gentleness to the people around you. This will change how people see the world. So what can you do about the world? Well, on some level, maybe not so much. On another level, it's really important that there are things we can do. Dzogchen, however, said, "What do you call the world? What is it you're calling the world?" So this question is really important too. Making those phone calls or whatever, maybe just frustrating or irrelevant even if you don't look at what do you call the world. So there's this planet, there's the solar system, there's the universe, there's all the microorganisms on your seat right now. There's all the other beings besides, you know, human beings. So what do you call the world? What is the world? What is it? How do we see ourself and the reality of things? Asking this question is not trying to reach some one answer because it's beyond that, but being willing to question what is the world, and how do we what is it that we're calling the world, and how can we see it in other ways? How can we see this body mind on our seat now freshly? And these two questions actually are not separate. This is the important point of this story. So again, Dzogchen said, "The mountains, rivers, and earth, are they identical or separate from you?" And this guy, Shishan, who, you know, maybe he grew up later. Anyway, he said, "Oh, separate." And Dzogchen held up two fingers. And he said, no, the same. Dzogchen still held up two fingers. So one of the issues in our teaching tradition is non-duality. Not being caught in one side or the other. But non-duality is not the opposite of duality. True non-duality is the non-duality of duality and non-duality. We think that it's not enough to say everything's the same, everything's one. It's not enough to say everything's different, separate. Of course, our language kills the world. It says there's these dead objects out there. There's a subject, verb, and object in most sentences in English. And so we see the world out there and people out there as, on some level, we see them as dead objects. People try to manipulate the world or use the world to get what they want, to make what they think is progress. And we don't have to indulge in that. Or else we're afraid of being verbed by subjects out there. You know. So either way. So there's another story, one of my favorite Zen stories. It's actually the story I used for my case when I was Shuso at Tassajara. And it's also in the Book of Serenity. It's case 21, I believe, in the Book of Serenity. But I'm gonna give the version of it with a commentary that Dogen gives in his extensive record. This is about a teacher in our lineage, actually the teacher of Dongshan, founder of our lineage in China, whose name was Yunyan. And he had a Dharma brother who was actually his biological brother named Dawu. Yunyan one day was sweeping the ground, doing temple cleaning like we're going to do some of us later here. Yunyan was sweeping the ground and Dawu looked at him and said, "Too busy." And Yunyan said, "You should know there's one who's not busy." And Dawu said, "If so, then there's a second moon." And Yunyan just held out his broom and said, "Which moon is this?" So I love this story. And rather than go into all of the commentary in the Book of Serenity, I'll just read Dogen's verse comment. Who sweeps the ground and also sees the moon? Holding up the moon, his sweeping truly is not in vain. Within tens of thousands of moons is placed this moon. So we think there's only one moon or one answer. But within tens of thousands of moons is placed this moon. Although called the second, how could there be a first? So Dogen is kind of wild sometimes. So Gary Snyder says it this way. He says that Zen comes down to sitting Zazen, what we've all been doing, and sweeping the temple. And it's up to you to see what the borders of your temple are. So what do you call the world? How wide is the world? Do we take care of our neighborhoods? How do we take care of Chicago? How do we take care of Turtle Island? How do we take care of people suffering genocide and famine and disease in Yemen because of our bombs? How do we take care of Muslim refugees fleeing from Buddhist persecution in Burma? Anyway, what do you call the world? How wide is the world? And of course, you know, we also take care of our own little space of ground. So later we'll have a time to, those of us here for the day, to sweep this temple, to take care of this space. And how do we do that? And, you know, someone might say, oh, you're too busy. So many of us feel busy in our lives. Many of us are victims of multitasking and have many things which we are trying to do. And, you know, that's great. But can you remember the one who's not busy? You should know there's one who's not busy. So on the Han out front is inscribed, life and death is the great matter. Don't waste time. Once somebody asked, my teacher, Reb Anderson, what is not wasting time? And he said, forgetting the one who's not busy. So, communion with the source. And communion with speech or expression. How do we express Buddha on our seats? How do we express Buddha in the world? One or two? Tens of thousands of moons. So, we've been talking about this situation for 5 days, and I appreciate all the people who've come together today as well. So I'm going to stop and ask for your comments or questions or reflections. What can you do about the world? And what do you call the world? Please feel free, comments. Kelly, hi. A little louder, please.
I have a question about sweeping the temple.
Yes.
And not seeking progress.
Yes. Yeah. This idea of progress is so deeply ingrained in our culture, but maybe just in human consciousness. We want things to be better. And that's, it's not, that's bad. But we get caught up in ideas of what's better. Can we just, we think we need to be somebody else or somewhere else or if only whatever. How can we be right here sweeping the temple, taking care of this body-mind, taking care of our friends, taking care of our world, without attaching to some idea of some future outcome? It's not that there's not some benefit or transformation or transformation function of our practice, but if we have some idea of progress and we're, you know, deliberating and calculating and we want to get to this place or this point, and then we can get hung up on that. Can you just enjoy sweeping the temple? Can you just enjoy helping a friend? Can you just enjoy making a phone call to try and make things better or whatever? This is challenging because we, you know, this idea of progress. It's a good question. It's a question that others have brought to me this week, and maybe it's not even that there's not progress. You know, we have all kinds of things we know, and so there's ways we can discuss and deliberate what is progress and what is not. But sometimes what seems like progress has unintended consequences, right? So even with good intentions, let alone with bad intentions. So, it's a good question. Thank you. Is anybody going to make progress over that question? And you've come all the way from California. Do you have some response?
What are we going to do about the world? Where is the world? Where is sweeping? Where is the edge of the temple? Well, I went on it was called the Election Session. So we went to the Central Valley of California, and we were canvassing for a candidate who would be a Democratic member of the House of Representatives. So we went with a particular so we do Zazen in the morning and we go canvassing in the afternoon. But then sometimes Dharma teachers would come and give talks, and someone said, when you're canvassing, it's Buddha meeting Buddha. And I was glad that Halloween came right before the election, because sometimes I go to someone's door. We have a little app on our phones, and it would either be Democrat or decline the state. A lot of the people. So we come, and then sometimes they say, oh, we're Republicans. We don't want to vote for that guy. But they usually had some fantastic Halloween stuff in the front yard. So I said, well, that's okay. I love that pumpkin, that one. You know? They start laughing, and then I would leave. But although we had a definite goal of getting someone elected, we're just trying to meet people without pushing them towards the goal. I mean, we would talk about what was, you know, what I thought was my strong points, you know, as a candidate. But our emphasis was just on meeting people. So I tried to do that.
That's good, yeah. How do we respect everyone? How do we meet people who have different opinions from us respectfully as Buddhas?
One time a guy came to the door and had two children, so we were talking, and I said, oh, your children are beautiful. He said, come in, I have another child over here.
Yes. How do we take care of the children? Other comments or viewpoints or reflections? Kathy.
don't remember the person they were interviewing, but he was talking about Nelson Mandela. And so he was talking about Nelson Mandela.
Can you hear her in the back there?
Yes,
okay.
Thinking about what needed to be different in South Africa, what the roles were, what the problems were, what needed to be different, and that during his time in prison that he was working on himself to develop the skills that he hoped to see eventually flourish in South Africa.
Ah. Yes. So yeah, good example of how looking at, communing with the source, looking at what's most important for you. What do you care about? All of you are here because you care about your life, or the quality of your life, or the quality of the world. We may come to somewhat different conclusions about how to, what to do, or we each have our own particular ways of acting in the world, but this process of, for Nelson Mandela, I guess his prison cell was his zendo. He was able to look deeply at what's important. Yes, Aishin.
Alongside with that, we are all here because we care about the world and want to find a way to do something about the world, but
sure.
Maybe have views about what that is that are very different from us. Perhaps in a way we are somewhat self-selecting, and I just want to highlight that it's in doing something about the world, we really need to include all voices, which is hard and challenging.
Yeah, so I told a story about Fayan and Dizong that happens later on. Fayan, who was the guy who founded one of the five houses, stayed with Dizong and practiced with him for a long time. And at some point, he was going to go away and wander around and check out other teachers and check out the world. And he came to Dizong and said to his teacher, "I'm going out on pilgrimage." And Dizong said, "Oh, what's the point of your pilgrimage?" And Fayan said, "I don't know." And Dizong said, "Not knowing is most intimate. Not knowing is nearest." So we talked about that one of the days this week. What is intimacy? Dogen says in his commentary on that, not knowing is intimacy, and knowing is also intimacy. But right view in Buddhism is not to hold on to one view, to be flexible, to listen to other views. But then, we can also speak our truth to power strongly, but also to not be caught in dogmatism. So thank you. Yes, Suzanne.
When I hear the phrase, the question, what do we call the world, there's just so much in that.
Yes.
What do we call the world? What is our view? Where are our blinders? Where's the expansion? Where's the contraction? When do we go around the other side of the mountain? Who do we include in that? But there's also, what do we call it? What do we, like, what do we put into it? What do we say? What do we name it? Like, and that watching that shift is really powerful. And when being immersed in a particular conversation, then going about the world and seeing what's there and what's missing in a different way is so, it just makes that awareness an opening to broadening even more, or looking beyond and seeing and including other voices and seeing what is there and what isn't there. It's just that question is there's just, you can't stop kind of seeing it and looking into it.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, that questioning and not, not holding on to one really tight, to one version of what we call the world. Beginner's mind, being open to learning, being open to different opportunities. David. Right. Thank you, David. Okay.
When you're saying look for the commonalities, I think it's also important to listen to and respect difference. Because I think if we go out into the world for people who are different and say, let's look for the commonalities, we can unintentionally impose a dominant lens on that that reinforces difference. You know, like, it actually doesn't build connections. So I think it's really important to really respect difference.
And learn from difference.
Yes.
Not just tolerate, but really appreciate.
And look at where we are on that perspective, and that where we're still going and where our perspective is in terms of difference and sameness. There's a huge teaching within that that's much bigger than just let's look for the commonalities. And I personally, when somebody sees my difference and acknowledges it and acknowledges that they see that, I'm much more comfortable than if somebody is saying, oh, I don't see you as a lesbian. I see you just like everybody else. Then I'm a little afraid. So, respect for themselves.
Good, thank you. Yeah. Yes, Akash.
So, like, just to build on what everyone else was saying, I think Roshi made an interesting point about having good intentions and then those maybe going awry. Like, what do you want to do in the world with having all the great intentions? Like, I look at things in my lens and my perspective, which is, like, in the sphere of science and healthcare, and I feel like every time I read some new evidence-based article on what's healthy for people, we're always changing our opinion on prior things that we did, that we find out about a new side effect of a medication, which overall has increased the lifespan of people, or we change our viewpoint completely. I just thought of one thing, which was like, I read an article on omega-3, which is in your fish oil, and like how it's really good for your heart. And they were promoting that a lot, like telling people to take your fish oil supplements, and now like, the latest evidence came out that the amount that people take usually is just really not doing anything, so everyone's wasting their money on that. And the only fish oil that really works is the prescription Vascepa, which is like the pure omega-3, and it's in like a dose that you would never ever be able to eat naturally. You have to like extract the oil from like 600 fishes or something, which no one would ever do. So this is also something like that shifts me to the point about like technology, like how far we've come. Though technology is something we use to manipulate our environment and people, surely, but like now we live in a way more interconnected world with telecom. And like part of that is like accessing more people. So I think that the globe continues to grow in that sense. But then like at the same time, like those companies that interconnect us, like Google and stuff, like their data centers have a huge carbon footprint. And then the monks talking about like what could be better than me eating this rice, like that, like farming and like livestock, like cows and stuff, the methane they generate generates a huge footprint on the environment. So like, maybe something as simple as like cutting down on the meat we eat as a society, not farming as many animals. Like, we still have to feed people, but encouraging like vegetable diets or less like commercialized agriculture.
Yeah, so all of the issues and difficulties and challenges of progress, right? So anyway, the food we serve here is all vegetarian. Okay, last word, Tom.
That's an interesting topic you bring up, because really what you're talking about is Cartesian dualism, powering science, and that's too.
Well, thank you all. These questions are worth holding and continuing to allow them to inform you. What can we do about the world, and what are we calling the world? So